Hello and welcome to Top Realtors of Atlanta, sponsored by Commercial Capital Limited and the Tyfair Commercial Group. I'm your host, Brian Peart, the president of Commercial Capital Limited. We're excited to introduce you to some of Atlanta's top realtors. On every episode, I will be joined by some of the top realtors in our area to discuss the real estate landscape and the latest news and trends within the industry. Every month, we will release two new episodes. One show will focus on residential real estate, while the other will concentrate on commercial real estate. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about commercial real estate with one of the queens of the net lease space, Nancy Miller from Bull Realty. Nancy, welcome.
Well, thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about you and about Bull Realty?
Okay, thanks. I've been with the company for 20 years, and we're a full-service commercial real estate firm with about maybe 35 brokers at this time, and we handle all the typical specialties in commercial, from apartments to industrial to what I do, net lease and so forth. Before Bull Realty, I've been in sales and marketing all my business career, working for AT&T, working for myself and so forth. And I'm a Emory grad and a Tulane grad, and that's about it. And my tennis game is no longer very good.
Have you picked up pickleball yet?
No, I do a little racquetball, but I'm still going to do pickleball soon because everyone else is.
Everyone else is. That's the trend, isn't it? So I've known you for a long time. You've been really big in the net lease space. Why don't you real quick just explain what a net lease property is, just for those who may not know.
Sure. Often it's referred to as mailbox money. Someone who is an investor will buy the, usually a fee simple, or they'll buy the land and the building. They don't operate the business. It might be a fast food, it might be a tire store and whatnot. And they typically have long-term rents, rather leases, and you hope to have a strong national credit tenant. And it's just sit back on your lazy boy, and it's mailbox money. And as a landlord, you're just doing nothing most of the time. So it's an alternative type of investment that a lot of people have never heard of or aren't aware that you possibly could do.
So let's talk about that. The stock market's become increasingly more volatile. When you're looking at other investment options, you know, for investors who are busy, they want to diversify, is commercial real estate in this net leased investment property a good option for them?
I think it's terrific. I eat my own medicine, and I have a stock portfolio. However, I also have my own commercial real estate that I purchase, but many of the reasons obviously are diversification. The stock market in the last 3 or 4 months has been bouncing around. If I have a long-term lease with a QSR, quick service restaurant, or a dollar store, that lease may be a 10 or 15 year lease, so I'm sitting back, I have no sweat, and it's not going to be a home run every time, but it's going to be a single, double, or triple, so I'm not going to worry about it. And it's very passive. I sit back, as I said, and do nothing. And there are different types of net lease, double and triple net leases. And as a landlord, just think about this. I just sold a week and a half ago my 5-unit apartment building in Midtown Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I was the property manager also, so I took the calls for this, that, and the other. I also own a dollar store. I don't get any calls for that at all because the tenant is responsible for everything.
Right.
And the other piece is, with owning property, you have depreciation, you have tax opportunities of depreciation. And if one does something called a 1031 tax-free exchange, they can defer the taxes. So it's a real asset, and you have far more control over your destiny, and you have level long-term income.
Right. Okay. So let's say I'm out there and I'm looking at investing in one of these. What are the characteristics I should look for in investing in a net lease property?
That's a good question. I suggest that you look at tenant quality. Is it what we call a national credit tenant, a big name, like it could be a Wendy's or an Arby's, or it could be a Mavis Tire? You look at the location. Is it a location that has good visibility, good signage? Is the parcel large enough so that if for any reason that tenant were to fail, I can repurpose it? Do I have enough room for a drive-through for maybe a Starbucks in the future or a Dunkin' Donut? You also look at the length of the lease. Do they have rent bumps, option periods, and so forth? And you, of course, the financial piece of that is, what is the going in return or cap rate? So there are a lot of factors there to consider. And one point I'd like to make is, whether it's in small town America or a big city like Atlanta, the cap rate is going to be relatively the same with a particular tenant. And so if I am a McDonald's in Metro Atlanta, if my cap rate is, let's say, 5%, my cap rate in small town America is also going to be 5%, but the cost of the land and the building are going to be very different. So my cost of entry into small town America for that single tenant property is going to be far less than it would be in Roswell Road in Metro Atlanta.
Right. Or California.
Or California. Forget it.
That's right. So what type of returns might an investor expect in net lease properties? And are there any benefits beyond just collecting the rent?
Recently, COVID or pre-COVID, cap rates were probably, and let me define a cap rate,
yeah,
if I will,
let's do that.
If I can. A cap rate is just a ratio, and it's a ratio with the net operating income translated as the annual rent as a percentage of purchase price. So In simple matter, if I'm getting $60,000 a year in net operating income and I pay $1 million for that property, my cap rate is 6%. Mm-hmm. So that's important to apply. That seems to be the benchmark for measuring.
Right.
So if you think about that, pre-COVID, cap rates for blue chip companies were maybe in the, I'm giving a very big average, 5.5%, and maybe up to 7.5% for non-credit tenants or maybe franchise tenants. However, in the last 2 years, cap rates have significantly dropped. They may be now 4.5% to 6%. And the why of that, which is pre-pandemic, we had no scarcity. During the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, folks were afraid that the regulations for what we call an IRS 1031 exchange, tax-free exchange, were going to change. And so all those investors who have had 1031 exchanges along the way, and these are probably larger, more sophisticated investors who've been investing in over time, They got concerned. So what happened is all of those folks put their property on the market, and then they started searching for properties. So what happened was the cost of the property values went up, which the inverse relationship is that the cap rate goes down.
Right.
So we're in a situation at that point of scarcity. There is a high demand in the last year and a half and short supply. Cap rates and prices went up, cap rates went down. Pre-pandemic, a 15-year dollar store, Dollar General, for example, might have been a 6.25 to a 6.5 cap rate. Today, on my way in here, I'm looking at a 15-year triple net Dollar General in Podunk at a 4.75 cap rate.
Still today.
Today.
Wow.
And if you couple that with the fact that interest rates are going up, you know, you've got a kind of a whirling problem of how do I afford that, and will cap rates adjust upward to compensate for interest rates?
Right. So let's talk about that. How can someone make money? We've got this environment where there's high demand for quality properties and rising interest rates. What can someone do as an investor to ensure that they're making the right moves, whether they're buying or selling that investment property?
That's a very interesting question. And that's why you're here
to ask interesting
questions. To improve returns, there are some strategies. For example, instead of buying that 15-year lease, consider buying a shorter lease, a 9-year lease, a 10-year lease, something like that. You'll have a higher cap rate or a lower price so long as that is still a good quality tenant. That's
right.
One thing to do. The other thing is to consider buying properties with tenants who maybe are not blue chip, but they're growing and they're strong and they may have some locations and some history, but they're not going to be a star like a Chick-fil-A or so forth. And so they may be local tenants or smaller tenants. Sometimes they also may be franchises, because we consider franchisees of, let's say, Wendy's or McDonald's to be less of a quality tenant than a corporate-run location.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a way to do it. And also, if you have a lot of cash around, consider financing. If you can leverage, if you're interest rate is low enough and your cap rate is high enough, what we say is your cash on cash return could be better than the cap rate. That's another strategy to follow.
If you don't mind, can we break that down as an example, the cap rate using the cash on cash? So let's say someone's buying a $1 million property easy at a 5 cap. How can they leverage cash on cash, make that return better?
Well, at a 5 cap, they might not be able to, but let's say they get lucky and they do it at a 7 cap.
Okay.
So if it was a 7 cap, a $1 million property, the net operating income is $70,000
right.
a year. If they were to get lucky and get an interest rate, let's say at 4.5%, then depending on how much money they put down or what becomes their loan to value, if they put enough money down, they will then have the net operating income of 70 less the mortgage, whatever it calculates to be, is some number. And then I take, let me make that number to be $75,000 after mortgage. And so they've probably in that case put quite a bit of cash down. But $75,000 as compared to if they paid all cash at a 7% cap rate, they would have $70,000 in their return and their net operating income. So if I have $75,000 after paying debt service and I put down whatever the amount was, let's say I put down $500,000 or $600,000, my cash flow is going to be better, or my cash on cash return, than it would be just paying cash for that and
right.
having that 7% return. That's a hard example quite today because interest rates are so high and cap rates are so low. But if someone has a lot of cash, using the leverage, they can buy also multiple properties as well. So it's the timing of that question in terms of where we are in the financial market today, it's a toughie, but that's one way.
That's one of those things we do. We do commercial mortgages, and we'll sit there with them and try to run the numbers and see what works best. You know, buying two properties for $1 million, using that same $1 million but buying two properties with different cap rates, does that diversify you better if you're using some leverage? And it really does depend. You know, rates are about 1% at least higher than they were, you know, at the start of the year. So that does change the dynamic. But to your point on the triple net lease, I mean, these are businesses that are not going anywhere. You know, dollar stores are going to be around. Whereas the stock market, you know, what if it crashes in September and you lose 50% of your money? Mm-hmm. You're still getting that solid return, you know, even 10 years from now. And so there's a lot of stability in the net lease space.
You bring up a topic or related topic that I might think might be of interest is what tenants are better tenants than others. And the dollar stores, for example, they are pretty much COVID-proof and recession-proof, and you'll always have a need for a dollar store. And think about other things. I get nervous with oil and lube places, for example, as EVs or electric vehicles come into play more and more and more. We're going to need less oil. We're going to need less of that type of business. Even though they're technically in very good real estate location-wise, that's something that I get a little bit concerned about. And so we have to think in terms of not only for today a quality tenant, but let's look 5 and 10 years down the road.
Right.
That's the thought.
Because at the end of the day, you are still owning the real estate, and it can be repurposed if something goes on. Whereas if you buy stock at $100 and it goes to $50, there's no repurposing. You've just lost 50%, right?
Yeah,
so, okay.
Right.
So, what other advice can you give an investor to ensure they're making the right moves when they're buying or selling?
I would just tell them to, well, I'm biased, but I would tell them to work with a real estate professional in this environment who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find properties. And you're challenged, for example, if I find a quality property, I then want to put an offer in on it. So does 5 other people. We just put an offer in on a property, a Family Dollar triple net in Kingstree, South Carolina. There were 9 offers on the property. The property is going to go for $50,000 over ask. Well, I found out a sufficient amount of information on this so that I was able to guide my client because I really wanted the property. And we had to get from being the last on the list to being the first one that gets upgraded to the first class, so to speak. I'm being silly.
Right.
But you have to know what the situation is, tease it out, and make sure that you position your buyer as a strong buyer. A cash buyer is perceived to be a very strong buyer, all cash right. buyer. But a buyer who is doing a loan could still be a strong buyer, and that buyer, it would be to their advantage to get pre-qualified with someone mm-hmm. like yourself,
right?
So that they have that you can go and tell the other broker who's screening the potential prospects that you have a buyer who's going to put 40 or 50% down, who you may have done business with before, who owns XYZ other properties. So you have to almost create a resume so that that broker in this field of many people vying for the few properties will have confidence that yours is the best. And also, if you're doing a 1031 exchange as a buyer, that implies that you're going to be making offers on multiple properties. So you want to be cautious. And as the broker, I want to position my client to make sure that they're going to not be discounted because they're doing a 1031. Because on the seller side, the seller is saying you potentially could identify three properties and you're going to drop me at the end of the day, right before the end of due diligence. You're going to drop my offer and I'm sitting here sitting on my hands
right.
and I've lost 45 days in the market. So the notion of having an advocate who can direct you to lenders, to direct you, you know, help you in strategizing how to put an offer in, it's very important to, and especially today, to use a broker. You won't find the kinds of properties that you want in the net lease world. I'm sure if you have another property type, you can figure it out and do it on your own.
Right. I hear that all the time from people. They say they just can't find properties. It's such a tough search. But you said mm-hmm. something about getting the person, you know, getting them to look better in the eyes of the mm-hmm. of the seller. Like, give me an example. Like, what's something that you can do that you've done for people that would help them get in there?
Well,
like, how'd you get that guy on with the nine up higher up the?
My clients are, both of them are doctors,
okay.
And they have bought, last year they bought another property, a single tenant property through us, and they got it financed. So they are very interested in this, and so we have experience with them. I built up the fact that they're very strong net worth people or solid people,
mm-hmm.
That they have experience with net lease properties, and they're motivated to move, and they made the effort by asking over the offer price. And in that case, they wanted the due diligence period to be very short. They didn't care how long you took to close, but in that case, it was an unusual structure where they want the earnest money to go hard or non-refundable 10 days after the beginning of executing the contract, which is highly unusual.
Right.
Sometimes today, sellers are also saying the earnest money becomes non-refundable on day one. So we're seeing crazy things out there. But I, you know, again, I know how to spin, and it's not spinning like making up things.
No.
Spin it.
Putting them in the most positive light.
And I sometimes will do a write-up on the buyer to say they own XYZ properties. We've worked with them for X number of years. They have experience and so forth. It depends on each buyer. And I also, from my perspective, try to vet the buyer because I don't want to waste my time or my credibility with a buyer that is not going to be able to perform.
Right, right. Excellent. So if someone, let's say someone owns a triple net lease property now and the national tenant they have wants to try to negotiate term or changes, what's the advice you can give them? What could you give that investor?
During COVID, a lot of the national credit tenants came to the landlords and said, hey, business is down. We're trying to, you know, make it through. Can you give us a rent concession? In that environment, a lot of people did. Some of our clients, we would say to them, ask them to report their sales and show you their sales. Sometimes they're just doing it with the herd because everybody else is doing it and they didn't need it. So in those cases, some would give them a rent concession, but for that rent concession, they got an extended lease term. Oftentimes, some of the dollar stores, people get nervous because they're within a year or two of the lease ending, and they say, will they renew or won't they renew? And what will happen with my property located in Podunk? And so the dollar store will say, we'll renew your term, we'll extend your term, not renew it, but extend it, but we want you to hold the same rent for this period of time. We get involved and we'll say, okay, if you want to do that, that's fine. But if they're offering CAM or, for maintenance and so forth, ask them for more CAM and ask them for more renewal options and maybe ask them to increase the threshold for when the landlord's responsible. Maybe the landlord's responsible for repairs over 500. Maybe ask them for 1,000. So you ask them for some considerations in return as well. Don't lay back like a puppy dog with your four paws in the air and do nothing, because their goal is to try to reduce their cost of operation,
sure.
And your goal is to try to better yourself as well. So they become a little feeling threatening to you, but you know, when we intervene and work with folks, oftentimes it's a win-win.
And that's kind of, that's less likely now with COVID, kind of more on the, or are you still seeing these national tenants trying to negotiate leases? Is that an ongoing thing? Or
in certain sectors, they probably will. Casual dining, for example, has still been slow to come back because of staffing issues.
Yeah.
So they're having problems where they may come back and say, you know, we want to renew, but we've got to reduce our rent. So it has to be a business decision of the landlord if they can afford to do that. In certain cases, it might be wise, but the landlord should try to ask for what their sales history has been, because it could be smoke and mirrors on their part or not.
Right.
You know.
Right. To get a lot of those restaurants are doing takeout, a lot of takeout to try to offset the sales.
Mm-hmm.
Their sales may be high, even though the restaurant looks.
That's right.
Looks dead.
That's right.
So, well, rates have been going up, and you know, this podcast we've been doing residential realtors one time and then commercial realtors. And in the residential space at the start of the year, I mean, everything was gangbusters. There was no slowdown. Everybody was getting offers above list and all that. But over the last couple months with the rates going up, that's beginning to slow a little bit. But it sounds like to me in the net lease space, it hasn't really slowed. So speak to that. Why is that? Or why do you think that is?
There's limited product out there, which is one of the reasons I think development in certain sectors continues to grow in the dollar store sector, maybe in the tire sector. In some sectors, it's growing or repurposing. However, I also have seen in the last month a lot on the top of the email I get price adjustment. So some have been doing where they've been going at a 4.75%, like the example of the dollar store. We're seeing some edge up a little bit with a price adjustment. So they're sitting there longer, and I think that it's a factor of greed of the developer or the seller, because they think they can continue to get those prices. But they're starting to get the message that I guess I'm a little too aggressively priced for the interest rates on the market.
Right.
And so I think we'll see a slow trend towards a price reduction, and hopefully interest rates will kind of stabilize a little bit, though we're hearing that they're going to go up again another 75 basis points
right.
this year. Who knows?
Right. Well, but a lot of times, you know, in the net lease space, to speak to the financing piece, the money's not really tied to prime. It's really tied to the treasuries and those mm-hmm. markets. And the Fed raising these rates as aggressively as they are may ultimately keep those longer term rates down some, especially if they slow the economy down mm-hmm. quicker than they projected. So mm-hmm. it's not a direct correlation. The Fed going up 3/4 and our rates are going to go up 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
It could go down or mm-hmm. stay the same. So mm-hmm. that's where it pays to talk to experts and mm-hmm. see where
Absolutely.
It's at, you know.
Absolutely.
So you are nationwide. Mm-hmm. I mean, these net lease deals, it really is. If you're buying a Walgreens net lease, and as long as the lease terms are the same, you're getting the same product. It's not like you're buying a different product. And so you're nationwide?
Yes, I sell properties and list properties all over the country. In the net lease world, oftentimes we have buyers who have never even visited the property because, you know, you look at the lease and you can do a Google Earth and you can whatever.
Right.
And if they're triple net, where you have no responsibility in the tenant, it's all on the tenant, you know, yeah. And we have people that are buying all over the place. And
wow. So now, talking to those trends, maybe, are you seeing a flow of money into the South like I've been seeing, and more deals there? Is that making it more palatable for deals here, or because these other areas are losing some people? Is it what are your trends nationally that you're seeing?
A lot of times, buyers like to buy in states with no state income tax. So that makes Texas very popular, Florida very popular, Tennessee to some degree, and there are about six states that have no state income tax. On the other hand, Florida has entitlement fees that make it expensive for the buyer as well, but a lot of people are moving to Florida. But the Southeast and to some extent Texas, they have been very, very active, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, to a lesser extent, Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana, some. But people are gravitating down here because the weather's better. They don't like always coastal things because mm-hmm. they don't know what's going to happen with storms and
right.
things.
Hurricanes.
But in a lot of trends, people don't like the Rust Belt too much.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 70% or 60% of my business is in the states I just mentioned because of they're just more popular. And
yeah.
I think that it's more expensive real estate. When you think of the Northeast, you think of Connecticut and New York
oh, yeah.
and New Jersey. It's more expensive and it's much more densely populated. So it's harder to find things that you would buy there. And there's more development going on in the southern part of the U.S., which means that there's more new construction and the opportunity to get in on the ground floor on something.
And even with the cap rates, you know, the prices are lower. Like California, the prices are just really, really high. And mm-hmm. and for an investor out there, they can make more for their money here in the South or some of those states you
oh,
mentioned,
yeah.
like Texas, you know.
An example of that is we had a DaVita dialysis mm-hmm. under contract we had under LOI in Georgia at about a 5.65 cap rate. There's a DaVita in Illinois on the market for a 5.65 cap rate. Ours was priced at 1.6 million. That was priced at 3.7 million, but the
wow.
same cap rate.
Wow.
You know, so it's how you deploy your money.
That's
how you
right.
want to deploy your money.
That's crazy. A lot of the triple net lease deals I do financing on, they are people out of those states, California, New York, where they're looking to move their money to mm-hmm. cheaper locales, I guess,
mm-hmm.
would be the
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about concerns. Are you hearing anything from your clients? You do a lot of business with a lot of people. What is there any noise out there that has you concerned or anything that you're hearing? You know, I hear people can't find properties, but I've been hearing that for a while. What are some things you're hearing?
Well, a little bit on the vein of what we talked about of buyer concerns, take a look at seller concerns. I think sellers are afraid of, you know, they ask, well, is this a good time to sell? And I have conversations with folks all the time about that and when is a good time to sell? And if I do sell, what do I do? You know, what do I replace
right.
it with? And so I think that sellers have an opportunity right now to maximize the return because they may have bought a property at a 7 cap, an 8 cap or better in the past, and that property might be worth, even though there's time that has been burnt off that lease, they could sell that property for maybe a 5 or 5.5 cap rate. And I've done it with a couple clients recently as well. So they make money on the sale, and then they may say, oh, but A, what do I buy? And B, I don't want to pay that much money or interest rates. And I kind of say, well, you're going to get, potentially, if you buy, you're going to get a better tenant. You might get a longer lease than you have right now. You might be able to start a new depreciation schedule on your real estate. And there are all kinds of opportunities that they have if they don't get stuck in being scared. And the replacement properties, we can find them, but again, it is a struggle. And if they don't want to replace the property, they have the option if they have, they could pay the tax. And mm-hmm. if they've made that much money and they pay the tax and they put it in their pocket, what's wrong with that? An example, a quick example, is my family and I own a Title Max in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we bought it for a low amount, and we're going to sell it for a little bit higher amount. And I said to my brother, I said, is it time to sell? And he said, well, listen, Nancy, even though we're getting a good return on it, if we take that cash after we sell it and we pay the tax on it, each of us are getting a lump of money, let's call it each $150,000 in our pocket after paying the tax. How long would it take that lease to pay you $150,000? In other words, you would be getting something every month. And it would probably take 8 or 9 years for me to make up the $150,000 that I just put in my pocket after paying taxes. So is that a good decision to pay the taxes in that case? Absolutely.
That's a great example. I've never thought of dicing it like that, but that's an excellent example. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned something good, a new depreciation schedule. Depreciation's just a huge benefit of these, of all commercial real estate, really. It's, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Some of the high net worth folks need write-offs. They can do something called cost segregation.
Yeah.
And they pay a little money to do that, but they can accelerate the depreciation. I think you can do it over like a 5-year period mm-hmm. of time if they choose to.
Right. Because depreciation, it's not, you're not writing out an expense to depreciation. It's just something that's allowed in the IRS code. So mm-hmm. why not take advantage of it? It's something that mm-hmm. you don't get in stocks or any mm-hmm. other investment. So let's put your crystal ball on. What do you think it's going to look like a year from now in our market and in this triple net lease market?
I think the cap rates will have slowly gone up. Mm-hmm. Hopefully prices will have gone down. I think that we'll still have high demand and limited supply at that point in time. If anything changes in the tax code with the IRS, if anything bubbles up again that they're going to change 1031 regulations, we're going to see what happened in 20 and 21 where there's, again, a feeding frenzy. But I think we're going to see some of the tenant brands who are more favorable continue to be very, very successful. And depending on what technology ultimately does, the EV example I gave a few minutes ago and so forth, we're going to see some tenants go out of favor, some go more in favor. If you think like at C-stores, you think at Quick Trips and Wawa's and all that, well, those guys have got to retool pretty quickly, and they are adding power stations, electronic plug-ins, to all of their sites, because as people buy these Teslas and whatever, they need to plug in because the gas pump will not be as busy. But the in-store, they're going to go with more fresh food and things like that to bring the customer into the store to generate more income. So I think it's going to be an interesting time. A year from now, probably not too much change. 5 years from now, I think we'll see a lot of different things, different entrants and different types of tenants, and maybe pop-up tenants that take a space and then so forth, and then they the short-term tenants. But the fundamental of an investor always buying quality real estate, no matter what, in downturns and in upturns, that real estate will always serve them well because it can be repurposed or used and in some future value. So picking quality and paying a little more for it today or in the future is really a recommendation that I have.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that the real estate is still going to be there. Mm-hmm. I had money and I bought a property in 2008, a commercial property, right at the height of the market. And then Lehman went down and my property value went down. And it's up much more than it was back then, you know, because I've held it that time. You know, that said, I bought $5,000 worth of Lehman stock when it went down to $5. And because I had inside information. week later, that stock was zero. I
Bless
literally made no money.
Bless your heart, as they say.
So, you know, that's the thing is there is a value underneath it to a commodity, to an asset like that, that you don't get in the stock. So, So it's about time to wrap it up. Anything final you'd like to add? Any thoughts on the net lease space that you want to add before you give everyone your information?
I would just say that as we started out, it's a great diversification strategy. It's not a sexy purchase. It's not where you can drive by and have pride of ownership and say, oh, that fancy such and such is mine. But it's steady Eddie, it's stable, and it's a good type of investment that you won't get hurt on unless you do something really silly. But it's a great investment strategy, and it's one that you can sell at any point in time. And again, using a broker, using someone, an advisor who knows what they're doing is important, and doing your own research and learning. It's a fun area to learn. It's not rocket science by any means, but it's a lot of fun to create a net lease portfolio along with your stock portfolio. And no more Lehman's for you, by the way.
Right. It was, anyway. So why don't you tell everyone how to reach you? What's the best way to reach you, whether it's phone, emails, whatever?
Well, thank you. I can be reached. The easiest way is email nancy@bullrealty.com or call me at the office and leave a message, 404-876-1640. And I'm at extension 118. And just leave a message and let me know your phone number and what your questions are, your interest is, and what time you'd like to chat. And we'll make a time to visit either by in person or by phone or by Zoom, whatever. And I work with a lot of folks who are just starting out. There are no stupid questions. And I do like to help people be in a ministerial way because I want people to make good decisions early on and not falter where they don't need to.
So you will work with maybe unexperienced investors, help them get into the game as long as they've got the money and the ability to do it.
And I'll be realistic. For example, someone, I'll say to them, how much do you have to invest right now? And they'll hem and haw, and then they'll say, well, I've got about $40,000. And I will say to them, realistically, that's great, but I will not want you to buy anything that you can buy that you put $40,000 on, because the quality is not going to be there.
No.
So I often screen folks to make sure that they have sufficient funds. And sometimes some of those folks will say, they'll say, I have partners and I can add, how much money do I need to add? And they may wind up suddenly with $500,000.
Right.
And so you never know. So we talk it through.
Good, good, good. Well, obviously, you've been a great guest, and you obviously know what you're doing. So I do think in this space especially, it really helps to have someone who knows what they're doing. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for joining us for Top Realtors of Atlanta, presented by Commercial Capital Limited and the Ty Fair Commercial Group. We offer new shows on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month, so keep your eye out for those. You can find us on Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcasts. You can also enjoy the show anytime by visiting businessradiox.com, selecting the Gwinnett Studio, and then clicking Top Realtors of Atlanta. Thank you again, Nancy, and on behalf of Commercial Capital Limited and the Ty Fair Commercial Group, I'm Brian Peart, and this has been Top Realtors of Atlanta on Business Radio X.